thank Anthony for sharing. And then with the next speaker, we'll give you Joan.
Oh, yeah.
I'm an act named Joan. It's a good day to be clean. It's a good day to be clean. Just tell you a little bit about how I got here and what I do to stay here. First, I'm just like, my stomach is real, you know, churning and turning up and down. I guess about 12 noon today, my son's girlfriend called and said my son had had a seizure. My son is 29. He had a seizure one other time, probably about maybe 2 months ago, for the first time ever in life. And so he went and got checked out, and they said it was okay. And so now he had another one today, two. And he was at the hospital when she called. And they checked him out. He went back home. She called me back and said he had another one, and the ambulance was on the way to get him. And so, and I had talked to him the first time he had the seizure today. So, you know, I'm just like real nervous. You know, I might have to just go back when I'm done. My brother is here, and my oldest brother is at home, so I did call him to tell him, you know, to go and see what's going on. My mom is like 86, so it's something she really don't need to deal with, you know, because she looks at my son like her son, because that's who took care of him when I was in my addiction, you know. So I'm real nervous at this point. And I guess the nervousness comes from my family started out with 7 children, a mom and a dad. And now it's my mom, me and my 2 brothers. The rest of my siblings have passed on, you know, so it's just real, you know, scary, you know, when you hear, you know, another person that's immediate in your family is having some difficulty, you know. But I pray, you know, the women in my life that allow me to help them encourage me. Gonna be all right. And then one of the ladies I sponsor brought me this today. Says, thanks for being my sponsor. You know, it's a little act of kindness. Because it's not always easy being a sponsor. Because you gotta tell them the truth. You know, if I base my upbringing on whether or not I should be here, I would probably say no. Whether or not I should be an addict, I'd probably say no. Because I had great parents growing up. Thank you. Mom, dad, 7 children, nice house to live in, church on Sunday, school was a requirement, summer vacation, 3 meals or more a day. You had to go to school if you stayed in my mom's house. I mean, I had everything growing up to become a productive member of society. And I know that we are more alike than different in these rooms. But you know, the disease don't care where you come from. It doesn't care about how much you got, who your daddy is, and, you know, how much money you got. The disease doesn't care. The disease wants anybody. And it gets anybody. I see sometimes, you know, on TV where you know, the rich people get caught up. You know, they got enough money to buy a treatment center. You know, hire the staff they want. You know, tell the staff what to tell them. You know, and they still can't get it. So I know this is not about money. I wouldn't trade it for money. You know, growing up, everything was pretty good. I think the unmanageability started way before I got to this program, because I can remember leaving home, you know, at the age of 18, moved out, quit school because I wanted to follow Chuck. Now, people from the metropolitan D.C. area, you know, Chuck Brown, you know, back then it was Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers. You know, I was going to the go-go and, you know, 10 to 2, 12 to 6. And my mother talking about come in by 12. I say, shit, Chuck don't come on to 12. How you going to leave the go-go for Chuck come on? You know, because Chuck knew me. So when I walk in the go-go, you know, he say, oh, gone, Joan. You know. You understand? He said that about 3 or 4 times. You know, so, hey, I had to be there just to hear that. You know? So I moved on out, you know, to be a Chuck groupie. You know, unmanageable. Left out without a plan. You understand? Without a plan. You know, and so slowly but surely, you know, I could see now where the unmanageability, you know, started to set in, because what happened for me is that I got attracted to the lifestyle way before I got, you know, addicted to the drug. You know, because I started, you know, I got attracted to hustlers. You know, and boy, after a few years, it's like, who is Chuck? You know, the one man I left for the go-go, by the 2 years, you know, who is Chuck? You know, Chuck was not on my agenda. You know, so what happened was I started using, and things started happening as a result of my using. And now I know it was like the manifestation of the disease. You know, because, you know, you start using, and in the beginning, I could use, and someone would ask me, you know, do you want some of this? I'd be like, no, I don't use that. I mean, with attitude, in the beginning. You want some of that? No, I don't use that. Or they'd say, you want some? No, I had enough. I'm gone in for the night. You know, here, give it to them. Here, y'all can take mine. In the beginning. That's why they say, play the tape all the way. Now we're talking about when at the end of the road. When at the end of the road, when, you know, you like in utter desperation. You know, where you living to use and using to live. You don't know that. Because at this point, I don't even know that I'm an addict. I don't even know that I have a disease of addiction. All I know is that my every waking moment at the end was about my next fix. Because it was never about the bag I had. It was always about the next one. You know how at the end of the road, when you don't have nothing, you go out on the strip, you waiting, somebody going to come through. Shit, give me something, right? Just a little something, not a whole lot, just a little bit. Just so it can take the, you know, the edge off, so I can figure out where I'm going to get my next one. So by the time I get a little something, I can't really enjoy it because I'm thinking about where the next one coming from, because in my mind, I'm saying I'm going to save something to wake up on. That never happened. I would always use it all, and then when it's all gone, I'd be like, damn. You know, I say, damn, what am I going to do? So I said, well, I'm going to stay woke all night, you know, so I won't lose the high, you know. Unmanageable, crazy as hell, right? But you know when you sit down, you're going to fall out, right? So I would, you know, end up falling asleep. Then my disease would wake me up. You know, when the illness set in, the disease say, it's time to go, honey. I don't care what you got to do, but we need to get the fuck out of here. You know what I mean? So I get up, and I go out on a mission. You know what I mean? I mean, like they say, by any means necessary. You know what I mean? And, you know, they say don't compare your story to nobody else's, because you might compare out. You know how you sit in a meeting, you hear somebody share, especially when you're new. You be like, well, damn, I ain't do that. Oh, well, damn, she need to be here. Oh, nah, hell nah. You know, so you end up going back out because you saying you're not that bad. Not understanding that it's a not yet. That it's a not yet. Even after years of clean time, all that you haven't done is still a not yet. So anyways, I ended up eventually going to jail. Went to jail. I was about 28 years old for my first time. You know, I sold narcotics to the police. You know, hey, my picker got broke. You know, I mean, in the beginning, I told you, the hustler told me don't sell nothing to nobody I don't know. They said, well, you bring me nobody I don't know. Shit, at the end of the road, shit, I ain't had nothing but a beat bag. I had to pull somebody. You know? So you pull them, you know, and you end up pulling the police. So when I got, you know, to the jail, they told me they tested it. And it was 99% pure. I go, y'all got my shit mixed up. Because I know that's not mine. Mine was definitely some Bonita and quinine mixed together. You know what I mean? So, you know me, I mean, you know, I'm like, I'm pleading not guilty. I don't know nothing about this, you know. So I plead not guilty, I'm going to trial, you know, like I'm going to get me a paid lawyer and shit. You know, ain't got enough money to even blow at nobody, right? So eventually, you know, they stepped me back, gave me 30 days till I go back for sentencing. And when I was locked up, I didn't hear about NA. And I'm sure it was there. It was about in probably in 83. And I'm sure it was there, but I did not hear about it. You know, so here I am again after the 30 days going back out. And because I didn't know I had disease of addiction, I went back to what was familiar. The people, the places, and to indulge in some of the same situations. You know, to end up committing the same crime. You know, and you know, you never realize what's going on until you're in handcuffs. You know, you'd be like, damn, I know I didn't know that, man. You know what I mean? So, and you know, and I'm going to tell my favorite story. Some of my D.C. folks know my story about, you know, when I rolled with the man ain't had no legs, right? You talking about unmanageable. Look, the brother ain't had no legs. His legs was cut off all the way up here. And he was driving. Okay? He was driving the car with a stick. You know. And the brother got so good, he could drive without looking down. You know. And I'm, you know, we be riding with him, chilling too, acting like the brother had legs. It was crazy. Damn. And we could never understand after all that craziness, why didn't he let us drive? You know, and so the day we rode with him, you know, he like missed the brake. So he went slamming into the lamppost, right? So being that he ain't had no legs, he went up under the dash, right? The brother, now this whole time, right? Yeah. That's probably him talking about me. Look. Anyway, being that the brother ain't had no legs, he went up under the dash. So they called the ambulance, fire trucks and shit, you know. But by that time, I done got out the car. You know, and so when the people come, they be like, you know, who's driving the car? I'm like, you're in the car. You know, so they go over to the car, they peep in the car, and all they see is his head down there dangling around and shit. So they was like, well, god damn. You know, so they like telling everybody in the, that worked at the police department, they told him, come on over and look at this shit. You know. So eventually, you know, they pulled the brother out the car. Being that he ain't got no legs, his little nubs was kicking and shit, you know. And they put him in the, he had enough sense to go to the hospital. You know, and get some money out of this shit, right? Not me, I was thinking about getting uptown. You know what I'm saying? Unmanageable. And, but you know, that ain't even the bad part. The bad part is we roll with him the next day. So that's just one of the crazy things, you know, that go on, you know, when you caught up in the grip. You know, some of those, you know, things you do. You know, that unmanageability, you know, thinking, you know. And so, you know, the second time I got arrested, that same night I got bonded out. I don't know how. I know it was through the grace of God. Because I know that, you know, I was on paper and I should have stayed locked up and see the judge the next day. But I got bonded out and I went to see the attorney. He said, you need to go to treatment or you're going to go to jail. I don't care where you go, but don't go back in front of him. So, hey, sounds like a good idea to me. Go to treatment, not to go to jail. Now, hear this now. I'm going to treatment not to go to jail, although my story tells me that my life is unmanageable and that I'm powerless over my disease. Denial will keep you stuck. Denial will keep you thinking that you're better off than you really are because you don't want to look at the bigger picture. But they told me also, it don't matter how you get here. It's just that once you get here, honesty has to set in. Because the things that I did in my addiction, just not normal. You know what I mean? When I got to that treatment center, I was 30 years old. I had nothing to show for being an adult. I had nothing to show for the way my parents brought me up. I had no fixed address. I wore about 117 pounds. And as you can see, I ain't no small girl. You know what I mean? Never been small, but by the time I got to the treatment center, I wore a size 6. Okay? I had a son. The same son I just talked about. I left at my mom's house without her permission. Took him there one day because I got set out. I took him to school one day. Came back about 20 minutes. Riding down the street. I say, damn, somebody's shit got set out. Set out. So as I kept riding, I started seeing some of my shit. I said, oh, no, that's my stuff. You know, and I had the nerve to have an attitude with the man for putting my stuff out when I ain't paid him a dime. Living in there for nothing. You know what I mean? So I called my mom. I told her what happened. She said, look, come on here. But I'm going to tell you, when you come here, you need to do what you got to do. Don't be leaving that boy here and all that. You know, because I was the youngest. My mother ain't had no babies. She wanted to do her thing. It was her time to do her thing. But I took him there with the intent of leaving him there. Took him there, told him I'm going to the store, I'll be back. Days, weeks, months, years went back. Never made it back. Never made it back. Carried another baby for 9 months. Got no prenatal care. Used drugs on top of it. I could feel the uncomfortability. And I hid it, hid the pregnancy the whole time. Wearing big clothes. My water broke. I was on 7th and T in Nate's pool room. Went up to Howard, had a baby. My disease say, leave it there. Leave it there, you know, and that's what I did. You know, and I got a problem with going to treatment, you know, because I have a problem. I'm going there only not to go to jail. So the same day that I got to the treatment center, the D.C. area H&I subcommittee, stands for hospitals and institutions, came up and brought the message. I think my first spiritual awakening is when they said, any addict can stop using. Lose the desire to use and find a new way to live. Man, I don't want to take off running. Where they not using that? I mean, where are they not using? That was language I hadn't heard my entire time using that you did not have to use. So I started going to meetings while in that treatment center, and it's been on ever since. It's been on ever since. My clean date is September the 18th, 1985. That means slowly but surely, I walk up on 20 years of being clean, right? And I just want to say that, you know, clean time does not always equal recovery. Now, it's a good thing that when we do celebrate clean time, that we're celebrating clean time. We're not celebrating what you have accomplished. Some people get it twisted. Because they say, well, I ain't going to celebrate this year because I really ain't do that much. And now, we're celebrating clean time. Have you used? Have you used? Because it's about going through. They say, in the basic text, in the first step, they say every clean day is a successful day, no matter what happens. It also says that staying clean must come first. It says that help begins for the addict once admitting complete defeat. Who wants to admit complete defeat? That they can't handle something. Here I am in this process. I'm clean. I gained a little weight, you know. Boys looking a little bit. You know, get out the treatment center. Give me a place to stay. You know, get a little Blockbusters card. You know, get a little cable HBO hooked up. You know, get a little hoopty to drive. You know, got a little most card to go to the money machine. You know, when you new, it's important that you get a most card. You know, because when you go out to eat and they got to stop, you say, let me stop and get $20. You know. Now, for me, most of the times I stopped to get the 20, I only had like 22. You know what I mean? So, here I am in this process, not really understanding that getting clean and staying clean and also reaping the benefits of what the program had to offer meant that I needed to participate in my own recovery. That the process would not happen by osmosis. That because my sponsor was doing the damn thing, I had to do the damn thing for me. I couldn't, you know, like touch her and I'd get it. I had to get involved. So I guess for about 4 years of just, you know, just doing the shuffle of going to a meeting, going to a dance, going shopping, going to a meeting, going to a dance, going shopping, you know, got old. It got old because what happened for me is that the unmanageability came first for me financially. Financially. Because I could not, and I ain't lying because I got people in here can tell you, honey. And I got a husband in here can tell you, too. Because he's my husband today, but he wasn't always my husband. You know, and I've been with him like 26 years, 27 years. But he just became my husband last year. Last year because of, you know, my unmanageability. Because when it comes down to, you know, people being in a relationship, the one thing that would tear it apart would be one person being unmanageable. It ain't going to work. Now, I got a man in my life that comes from a lifestyle of, you know, selling dope pretty much all his life since the age of 16. So we come into this process off the break. You know, let me know I wasn't coming because of you. I ain't believe that shit, but, you know, it was all right. You know. And that he was going to take a risk. He was going to take a risk. Because the person that had never worked, you know, and he was going to take a risk. So we kind of got together because I was here before him. You know, he's going to do 16 years soon. So I was here before him. And for real, he really don't know the new me. He's still kind of operating off of the old me. You know, we all right. You know, so he probably thinking the new me is like a lot better with things. You know what I mean? So after we come together, you know, pretty much, the brother found out I couldn't manage $2. You know what I mean? That was so, it was so bad to where on several occasions, you know, he went to live here and I lived there. He was like, look, I'm going over here. I can't really tolerate this shit here. You know, because if I don't see the fruits of my labor, I might sell some more dope. You know, I got to see what's going on. You know, so of course, you know, every time, you know, it would separate, I would do better. I would do better, but I wouldn't stay better. You know what I mean? I wouldn't stay better. You know, I would say I paid bills and I didn't. And I would do stuff like try to get to the house, you know, to get them before he would get them. To see that they were doubled. You know what I mean? So here I am in the process coming to a meeting and wearing a mask. Not really letting you know who I am, because a lot of times newcomers especially hear your clean time and just assume that you got it together. They just assume you got it together. And they don't take nothing from you because we in the process. You got to do what you got to do. You got to get what you got to get when you get there. You know what I mean? And so it just was really, really bad, guys. You know, it was times when we would go out to eat, go out of town, and I would feel like I was a 12-year-old because I ain't have money. And he did. Now, I'd work 40 hours. I gotten a check. But we go eat, and I could never pay the bill. He had to always pay the bill. I'm talking about feeling inadequate. Now, he never made me feel bad about it. But sometimes I wanted to be able to pay. You know, or go out of town and could never, you know, help with it. You know, that he had all the responsibility. Or go somewhere and want to get something on time, like on credit. He always had to get it. And when he had to get it, and he got it for me, he ain't want no late shit. No late fees, none of that bullshit. You know, what love got to do with it? Pay that shit on time. I can remember he got me a Victoria's Secret card. And I'm saying that because I've had my experiences with him. You know what I mean? He got me a Victoria's Secret card. Had a $1,000 limit on it. He said, baby, look, just try and keep $500 on it at all times. You know what I mean? Okay, baby. Okay. You know, because when the euphoria, when you're in the euphoria of it, you're feeling good. It ain't till the euphoria wears off and you see the ugly side of addiction. So here I am. You know, I'm the one shop to, you feel good, I feel good. You feel bad, I feel bad. Let's go get a little sweet stuff. You know, it's your anniversary. Ooh, let me go get you something. You know, that kind of thing. So I'm shopping, you know, and man, I didn't know he was going to check on my shit, right? So he called up and find out I done spent damn near the whole thing within a short period of time. I think I might have had about $40 more on the shit, right? So I roll on up in Victoria's Secret with the little $40. Look, got me a little spray and give me the card like I had $2,000 on it. And they say, oh, this is no longer working. So what you mean? So I called them up. I said, so what happened? He said, look, you are not going to fuck my shit up. You're not going to mess my credit up. You know what I'm saying? You know, pay that shit off and it's over. Far as that credit card is over. You know what I mean? So I wanted to get mad about it. But for a minute, I had to practice principles over personality. You know, I had to want for the brother what he wanted for himself. You know what I mean? I can remember in my 10th year, hide my car, didn't pay the note, hide my car, 10 years clean, hide my car. You know. Then one night I came in late. So I didn't want to walk a distance. So I parked it right on the street. So I had a neighbor in the fellowship that lived across the street, right? About 4 o'clock, they must came and get that junk, right? So she called me up and said, girl, there's a tow truck out there, get your car. At that point, I needed to surrender. I said, all right. You know, I said, in fact, let me go give him the keys. You know what I mean? Went out, gave him the keys, and at that point, for real, it was a sigh of relief. Yeah. You know what I mean? So as time went on, eventually, I had to want something different for myself. And for years, people would always ask me why me and my husband wasn't married. And my thing would always be like the Oprah Winfrey thing. We all right. Don't worry about us. But in my gut, I wanted to be his wife. Because I felt like I had invested. And I won't see no damn body else being his wife. Hey. You know. And I kind of like told him, I said, look, if we break up, you better not date nobody in the program, okay? Because it's going to be a problem. Anyway. You know, I felt like, you know, I really wanted to be his wife, and I really never really expressed that to him. You know what I mean? And so what I did for Joan was decided to do something different. You know what I mean? And I started to pay stuff on time. You know, I started to become a 50-50 partner with him before I became his wife. You know, and I'm not saying to a point of being perfect, you know what I mean? But like 90% better. And I hope that's the way he feels, you know? And And as a result of just doing something different, I know last year we came down here and I was able to take care of it. This year we came here, I was able to take care of it. You know, and as a result, I'm his wife. You know, and I think it's a direct result of the changes that I made in my life. And it's not all the time easy. You know what I mean? It's not all the time easy. The one thing I struggle with now is my defects of character, the unmanageability in that sense. Just recently, I was dealing with resentment. Resentment is like the top of my list. When I'm resentful, it's not too good for the individual that I'm resenting, because I really want something to happen to you. In fact, I want to go to the street on you. You know what I mean? And recently, I felt like my supervisor, you know, he wrote me up. Partially, 5% was good. I deserved it. 95% was his shit. And so, resentment just set in, coupled with anger. So I was on the warpath. I was on the warpath, and I was going to look for anything to get him on. Anything to get him on. I mean, resentment and anger to the point where I had to call my other coworker, who's a Christian, and ask him to please, please pray for me. Because I'm just acting out. I'm just doing things that I don't want to do, because I'm just feeling like this brother is just doing things for the wrong reason. When all I really need to do was just look at the part that was mine. That's all I needed to do. But I couldn't focus on that because I was too caught up on the part that I didn't do. You know what I mean? And so as a result of talking to my sponsor, sharing with some other people, because I had to respond to the letter that he wrote on me. I had to give him a response. And so I took my time and I gave him a response. A response that ain't going to look too good for him. You know what I mean? Now, whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. I know that my response was a response of honesty. Of honesty. So when I'm being resentful and angry and unmanageable with my feelings, I do stuff like road rage. I do stuff like blow you out the way, bomb bomb, to only meet you at the light. So by the time I get to the light, you looking over at me like, well, she's a damn fool. What the hell is wrong with her? You're like, what is wrong with her? You know what I mean? Unmanageable to the point where in this program, I've been in service for pretty much 18 years. I just decided to step out for a couple of years last year. But the unmanageability came into where I was just so much in service that I forgot about home. That I forgot about, you know, I needed to wash clothes. My husband would say, are you going to get to the laundry? No, I got to put a workshop together. You know, that kind of thing, which was crazy. Thinking in my mind that if I don't do it, it ain't going to get done. Which is absurd. You know, so I had to make some decisions to kind of like balance that out. Now, again, I don't know if you agree, but I think I've done pretty well. Can you nod on it? Thank you, boo. Uh-huh. You know. And so things have gotten a whole lot better for me, you know, in the realm of, you know, being a lot more, you know, manageable with my time, with my feelings. Like, overall, things have gotten better. You know, I'm going to ask you, you know, kind of like pray for my son, you know, and hope that everything's okay. I'm going to talk to my husband and see if we need to leave, you know, to go. That's my only child, you know, and to see, you know, what's going on. If I'm still here tomorrow and you see me, it's because things got better. You know what I mean? You know, clean time don't always mean that you just know how to deal all the time. And don't think that when people with clean time share what's going on, they need love. They need your encouragement. Just don't assume that I already know what to do. Because I'm just holding on right here. You know, I appreciate my area, you know, for their support. You know, they love me unconditionally. I get so many hugs, man. It's like overwhelming sometimes. All the love that I get, it's just overwhelming. So if you're new here, I encourage you to stay here. Don't let anything or anybody run you out. Because you're going to see stuff that you're going to think is not centered around recovery, but it's okay. Just keep coming. Because I'm done. I ain't going nowhere. In the 10th step, they say the use is the lose. So I'm here to stay. Thanks for letting me share.